Good day, Health Coach E Radio listeners. I'm speaking to you from a little frostier, a little chillier Okanagan Valley here up in British Columbia today. And I can't help but think, I was wondering if you got that garden planted there, Dr. David, down in Clarksville, or whether you're getting a bit of a cold spell there, too.
Oh, no. Matter of fact, the seeds got shook into the ground well last night with our regional earthquake, which is pretty unusual for this area, but it just makes for good strong stems. So
oh, you're a brave lot in that storm belt, I'll tell you. I'm glad I don't have your insurance bill. Good to have you here with us, David. And Dr. Gregory, I believe you're speaking with us from La Jolla, California yet again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where the weather seldom changes.
That's not true. Sometimes it's, you know, shifts from being in the high 60s to the mid 70s.
Boy, you really have to dress for that, don't you?
Yeah, you have to be prepared here.
Don't you know that variability is good for you?
Mm-hmm.
Which we'll get into shortly today. And Dr. Rick, I believe you're speaking to us from a hotel room in Dallas right now in between presentations.
I am. Beautiful in Dallas.
Well, what takes you to Dallas?
We're here with one of the largest insurance companies in the world, in fact, and doing a series of presentations for their state, regional, and district managers about bringing health responsible living to their products and services and ultimately to the end user, their customer.
Isn't that exciting? And is the insurance industry in the U.S. Steadily awakening to the value and the wisdom and a cost effectiveness of being more proactive and supporting their clients and becoming more health responsible?
Very, 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 very much so. And all driven by the inevitability of the economics that we've talked about many times here. But everyone's finally come full circle, lo and behold, surprise, surprise, to say it's about our diet and lifestyle. And we've known that for a while. We haven't been equipped with the tools and resources to bring to bear on that problem, which is, as you well know, what we've all been about at Health Coach here. So we're bringing that message to one of the largest insurance carriers in the world, and they're very, very, very excited about it. So lots to report.
Well, that's exciting. And using an analogy that you use frequently, it's been like pushing mud up a hill the last number of years. It's been so evident to those of us who are doing this work personally and clinically about the remarkable changes in people's health trends, the decrease illness, downtime, the even reversal of many chronic degenerative illnesses that so many have been told are irreversible, our level of excitement and the obvious fact that most of our clients have been doing that out of pocket rather than at the as a result of being funded by any kind of insurance payment or coverage. And the cost effectiveness has been so evident to us that not only is an ounce of prevention worth many pounds of cure from an effectiveness standpoint, from a cost effectiveness standpoint for the individual, for the employer, for the insurance companies, for our government, it's finally the idea that time has come. There's many reasons for the resistance, but it is such an incredible gust of fresh air to know the success that you're now having in your discussions, Rick, with the powers that be who make the decisions about what gets covered and what doesn't, to now create real incentives for people to become more knowledgeable about where their health is at right now, and then to have our web-based tools to guide them for those who want to take responsibility and shift and improve those trends and prevent future disease to be able to do so time and cost effectively. It's such a great delight from this end, that's for sure.
Yep, it's very exciting stuff, and it gives me goosebumps to think about the impact that we can have on the health of our country and of our world, really.
Yeah. And as an example,
hey Mark, I want to let you know that your message is very powerful, but your voice isn't right now.
Thank you. I've got a tendency for this headset to drift away from me. So thank you, David. Thank you. Well, in keeping with powerful messages and being able to share with as many people as possible distinctions that make a difference with respect to the health comes that most aspire to, certainly our Health Coach E Radio listenership, one of the areas we wanted to move into following our discussion last week where we started and we began to talk about the importance of optimal dosing when it comes to virtually anything, but we spoke about it very specifically with respect to nutraceuticals and phytonutrients and the kinds of things that more and more people are supplementing in their diet today in North America and in our Western culture. I want to move on and cover a topic that we cover, I think, very well in a bulletin that Dr. Gregory Kelly wrote for us some years back called Chrononutrition. And to kind of set the stage for Dr. Gregory to fill in some of the gaps here and help you understand more deeply the value of this, I want to just ask a few questions of you around the impact of timing and order, which we'll go on to explain more. So what happens if we show up at our job at 3 in the afternoon instead of when we're expected to show up at 9 in the morning? What happens if we choose to drop our children at school at 4 p.m. or 4 a.m. in the morning, in the very early morning, instead of when the school opens at 8 a.m.? Or what happens if we get our schedule jumbled and out of sequence and we buy groceries on our way to work, especially if we live in warm climates, rather than on our way home? Well, we're sure you can imagine the confusion, not to mention the various added stress that would occur as a result of doing the right things that we just spoke about, yet at the wrong times and or in the wrong order. And this is something, while it makes sense in that context, and I was aware personally, I was some 15 years into my professional practice, was very aware of how the timing of certain things made a difference with my patients. I was very aware that our physiology is different in the day than in the evening. I was very aware that people that ate their majority of their meals and their nourishment earlier in the day fared far better than those that consumed the majority of their calories later in the day, like so much of our culture does. Yet when I was co-lecturing and got reacquainted with Dr. Kelly down in a international symposium in Australia, which is the first time we had a chance to hook up since Greg had attended a lecture that I was giving at his college, the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine, some years before that, I listened to Dr. Greg speak, and he spoke about timing and order in a new way and at new levels, and he shared some of the research that had been done with respect to chronopharmacology, in other words, the delivery of certain medications at certain times of the day, and then talked about the importance of chrononutrition, delivering certain nutrients at different times of the day, and the various impact that that had on our physiology. And given that I shared Dr. Greg's analogy and understanding of micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, enzymes, and what we're increasingly hear about today as phytonutrients, recognizing that these are signaling agents. They're actually communications. So we tend to think of them as more, you know, the bricks and mortars and physical stuff, but really what they are is they're highly specialized bits of information that are triggers or catalysts for very specific metabolic physiological processes in the body to occur in a healthful, productive way. And as I listened to Dr. Greg speak about some of the research about delivering them at one time of the day versus the other time of the day, it just struck home like it never had before. And I had a very large, very comprehensive pharmacy, nutritional pharmacy that I'd built in association with our clinic because as I observed the importance of various nutritional interventions over the years, and I was in a rural community, there was really no place for people to go get these things, I'd built a clinical pharmacy to meet that need. And I ended up over the course of the next several years, as Greg and I began to work together and as we uncovered and Greg led the research on really the impact of delivering nutrients at the right times of day in the right doses, between the distinctions we began to speak about last week around optimal dosing and the distinctions that we're covering here today to the best we can in a e-radio show format around chrononutrition and delivering those nutrients in the right doses at the best times of day, I ended up discontinuing at least 75% of the various formulas I was carrying in my pharmacy because I no longer had the certainty that those would be in the best interest of my clients, given they hadn't been formulated to honor the principles of chrononutrition and the honor the reality that our body's physiology shifts markedly at different times of the day, and giving the right nutrients in the right doses at the wrong times of day can be more deleterious to the to our physiology than helpful. So, Greg, I'd like to give you the floor here to build on our listeners' understanding of this extremely important area and hopefully give them enough information that they're moved to learn more by reviewing the bulletin that we've put a link to on the webcast page here and then following through and beginning to shift how you approach your supplementation, your nourishment, respecting these times of the day and times of the month and times of the year, as I'm sure you'll go on to explain more about, Greg.
Sure. Well, when I've done my class on chrononutrition when I used to teach naturopathic students, I typically began it with a little self-test, since most people would either know of a relative or a friend that's taking aspirin for basically to help lower their heart disease risk, or certainly has heard of taking an aspirin or baby aspirin for its heart purposes. I'd basically open up and ask a question something like, which of the below dosing schedules has been shown to have the most beneficial effect on blood pressure and clotting while simultaneously lowering the likelihood of having some kind of an ulcer or stomach bleeding, because that's one of the main worries for people taking aspirin every day for their heart purposes. So which would it be? Should you take that aspirin or baby aspirin 3 times a day at meals? Should you just take it once a day at breakfast? Should you just take it once a day at dinner? Or should you just take it once a day somewhere around 10 p.m., bedtime for most people? And in essence, what I've gotten, whether I've asked that question in a big group of people studying to be naturopathic doctors, a big room of people that are already health professionals, or a smaller audience of just lay consumers in a health food store type of setting, is a lot of confused looks. Something like, well, I know I'm supposed to take that, but no one's ever told me that it mattered when I took it. And what the research has shown is that the safest time to take that aspirin is somewhere around bedtime. And the most or least effective time, which also coincides with what would be the time most likely to cause the stomach bleeding, is at breakfast. And so what we end up having is we have lots of very well-intended doctors asking their patients to take this over-the-counter medication. The patient's taking it because they've believe their doctor, and it's in essence good advice. But no one taking that additional step and ever giving that timing bit of information that, well, you'll probably get better results if you do it later in the day, not so good if you do it at breakfast. And so the reality is then you have a lot of people just kind of fitting it into their life wherever it's convenient, which may or may not be when it's actually best. And that same principle applies to lots of things. When they've done research on toxic chemicals in animals, what they'll find is a toxin may kill 100% of animals given at one point in the kind of the 24-hour day. But if that same toxin is given to those same genetic animals 12 hours later, the vast majority, if not all of them, will still walk around. And so our physiology and the things that interact with it are profoundly variable in terms of their 24-hour and their seasonal schedule. And the point in time when we introduce, as you said, Mark, these things which are in many respects like information into that system will dramatically alter or influence the responses we have to that. And quite often the stronger that chemical compound, the more, startling the responses that are elicited at different timings.
Absolutely, Greg. And some of the feedback that we get, I know, and we've discussed this in the past from people, is, well, wait a minute, food, does that mean I should eat my foods at specific times of the day? And beyond what we've already tabled in our earlier radio shows about the importance of meal timing, you don't want to get down to the point where you're, bordering on an obsessive or neurotic approach to, gee, when should I eat a dairy product, given its calcium and there's two distinct rhythms in the day, are those the times I should consume that, et cetera. Food's quite a different signal to the body. It's very complex. It's very diverse. It's a varied signal. It's not nearly as specific as a targeted micronutrient is. And when micronutrients are being delivered and supplemented, then we want to be all the more both cautious and deliberate in when those signals are being delivered, because they have quite a different and more deliberate impact, as Dr. Greg was just speaking to, and that goes up the scale. The stronger the agent's ability to manipulate physiology is, the more important it is to deliver it at the right strength of that signal. In this case, we're talking dose, and at the best times of day to optimize that signal's impact, and to avoid those times of day that would create physiological confusion by having the body begin to respond to something. A classic example of this is giving something like melatonin, which is released shortly after going to sleep. It would be in the range of midnight, for example, to give someone melatonin in the middle of the afternoon, or to give them adrenaline, for example, before bed. So people can relate to those things. Now we're talking about much more subtle signals when we're talking about nutraceuticals and phytonutrients here. Nonetheless, they're almost always in concentrated forms. They're being used for very specific reasons, whether it's to correct for dietary inadequacies or to help favor a specific metabolic pathway that seems to be lagging for that particular individual. We want to be cognizant of this, so don't think of your supplements the same way as you would think of food, and don't think of food as the same signaling agent when it comes to this type of physiological impact. That said, I hope you've gone and you've reviewed the initial shows we did on meal timing, because those are extremely important cues for teeing up other important physiological functions in general. And we can always circle back if there's time or any questions on that.
The other thing that's important to recognize is that our body will have different needs for substances at different times as well. So, I would say the vast majority of people that I've met here, or someplace like Arizona, where there's intense sun during a good chunk of the year in the middle of the day, are pretty well educated on the need to protect their eyes and their skin from sun damage during the middle of the day. Now, when vitamin C has been studied in our eyes, as it turns out, our body naturally appears to concentrate the amount of vitamin C in our eyes to coincide with the middle of the solar day. Vitamin C being a strong antioxidant, so protecting it from light-induced damage. So the same with chronobiology and vitamin D. I've seen a lot more, press and scientific research on the need for much higher amounts of vitamin D now in, say where you are, Mark, in Canada, from, say, November through about this time of year than we obviously would have in the middle of July. So the timing of supplementation, or for that matter, these other substances, isn't just related to the day, and is directly related to need in many cases. Another example would be acetaminophen, which is called an anti-inflammatory drug used oftentimes for pain types of syndromes, can be somewhat hard on the liver. And the reason for that is there's a compound that our body makes that also has a rhythm, and that it helps detoxify or metabolize and protect the liver against acetaminophen. So if we take acetaminophen and give it to animals at the low point of that chemical or that biological compound's activity, and that compound's called glutathione, we get a lot more damage to those animals than if we gave that same medication at the high point when we basically get none. So, then in the real world application, that would mean, okay, well, maybe if someone's taking acetaminophen, it would be prudent to give them substances that would help prepare their body for that medication at the time they're likely to take it. So chronobiology isn't just about knowing when our body would make things, or naturally be inclined to have high amounts, the melatonin being an example. I think of melatonin as a darkness hormone, and our body basically has a night physiology and a day physiology. So melatonin in many respects is the signal switch that switches us into that night or sleep physiology. So I've seen one study that gave it at 7 in the morning to women and saw some responses that they, quite frankly, weren't all that desirable. Now, The truth is, all it did was induce night physiology in the morning, which doesn't look so great at 7, 8, 9, 10 in the morning, but preparing for sleep would look very different. So chronobiology, to me, has a couple different factors. It has, you know, making sure we time things based on how our body would naturally time it, but also being adept at figuring out what the needs of the body are going to be as they change over the day and over the year based on our diets, our lifestyles, our medications, and making sure that we have the right dose of something at the time of the day or the year when we're most likely to need it.
Excellent. Excellent ads, Greg. Now, David, you had some comments you wanted to lean in on there.
Sure. I think that we talk a lot about concepts and theories and things, but one of the most important reasons we're talking about this is that it makes a real difference in the outcomes of the people that we serve. I have a great example. Gentleman had been taking a multitude of vitamins, minerals, whole food supplements, etc. And he came in and he said, I want you to look over this and to give me your recommendations. And he, of course, had completed an online assessment so that I would have a full understanding of his lifestyle, behaviors, medications, diagnoses, stress factors, etc., so I could put this together. I made some recommendations for him to be timed and actually made into small packets so he could take them very conveniently in the morning and the evening. And he came back to me about a week later and he said, "Well, Doc, this is interesting. I've looked at this composite list of things that you've recommended and it really isn't substantially different than what I was doing." And I said, fascinating. And he said, "But I've read that thing on, you're supposed to take certain things when, so I'll just go ahead and use up these two boxes this 60 days because, and then I'll rethink things." I said, "Well, that's a fine experiment to run." Knowing that 60 days probably isn't a fair way to assess micronutrient therapies. Well, he came back after 60 days, or I had seen him a couple times in between, and he made mention that he said, "I'm sleeping more deeply. I'm recognizing my bowel rhythms are better. I'm having just improved sexual function," was another aspect that it came into this. And he said, "It's interesting. Yeah, I've never thought that when I brought something into my body makes a difference. And now I obviously see that it does." And so it's not always about quantity. As a matter of fact, it's, quantity is only one consideration. Certainly it's about quality, but timing is probably the least honored aspect of what would support an individual in their healing process. And it actually comes back to what is going to get the best long-term results for an individual, and those results being increased health, vitality, energy, and full enjoyment of being who they are. So it has been remarkable. I never before meeting Dr. Kelly, I certainly didn't have any idea that zinc had a rhythm and iron had a rhythm and all these various things that once you look into the research and the data, it's there. And if you choose to honor that or not honor that is really the question.
Thank you, David. And, spinning off of the discussion we had last week on optimal dose, one of the most delightful findings has been that by using the nutrient at the preferred time of day, you can get better physiological results with far lower doses, more food-like doses, which is a delight to witness clinically, especially when we recognize the potential for example, blunting and decreasing the sensitivity of receptors to those nutrients. So when you talked about, David, that 60 days isn't really a great trial for a micronutrient program, for those that take micronutrients in a way that they see profound changes in several weeks, know that almost certainly with that kind of a shift that you're using drug-like doses, and there's likely going to be a pushback or there's going to be a similar decline in performance over time in direct response to something that manipulates the physiology in a very drug-like way. So know that that's not what we're looking for. What Dr. David's talking about is measuring key indicators of health over time, and the longer you're on the appropriate nutritional support, like the longer you're on the appropriate exercise program or the appropriate sleep and rest and recovery program, you can expect to see the results accumulate over time. Using shorter-term this-for-that approaches seldom impact longer-term biomarkers in that fashion and can actually lead to a deleterious effect. And when I was listening to you, Greg, go through a number of the different important distinctions, what I was doing is reflecting on, okay, I'm a consumer, I'm listening to this broadcast right now, and I'm going, holy smokes, like, you know, I'm just staying away from these things. You know, that it's way too many distinctions to make here for me as a consumer to do. Know that after not only studying for 25 years in this field and being considered one of the foremost authorities in nutritional interventions and speaking to thousands of doctors over many years, I felt exactly the same way as I became more aware, largely due to Dr. Greg's education and research analysis that he shared with me. I felt the same way, like I'm messing with things here that I don't want to be messing with because I can't be sure, first and foremost, that I'm not creating any kind of problems downstream for my patients. And we'll talk more about upstream, downstream in a subsequent broadcast. But needless to say, I know exactly how you felt, and I can't imagine now practicing clinically and making nutritional recommendations without the support of an always up-to-date rules engine with thousands of rules that are factoring in these kinds of distinctions in light of your individual age, gender, geographical location, which dictates intensity of sun, seasonality, medical conditions, predispositions, any medications that you're taking, various stressors, sleep and stress responses. It's irresponsible, quite frankly, when there's a system that helps differentiate and helps in the decision-making process to practice and to make nutritional recommendations, especially over the long term, without utilizing the system that we've now built. And one of the main reasons we built it was because there wasn't this kind of help for us as health professionals. We knew the impact better nutrition could have on our clients, but we also knew we could do it better still, and someone needed to do it. So over the last 8 years, that's what we spent our time and attention building, was the online assessments and rules engine that would allow us and our colleagues and each of you as healthcare consumers the opportunity to stay current with the latest distinctions and know that you're doing things safely and appropriately to the extent that the knowledge is available to do so today. So I wanted to make sure, if you're feeling kind of like, oh, just to heck with it because there's too many moving parts, know that working with a health coach who knows how to use our system to make sure they're creating safe, efficacious programs is certainly a much better choice than no action at all on your part. Now, Rick, I know you...
Absolutely. I would so much mirror those comments that doing nothing is certainly not the best route here, but using all the tools that are available. You know, frankly, you know, having been a consultant in this field for many years myself, I have been overwhelmed at how much information can be gathered, analyzed, and then output to a simple, easy-to-do, and highly efficacious plan. And frankly, this is it's just great. I mean, I just can't imagine somebody not using this in the practice of medicine or in the practice of health. So it's sad that I had to make that distinction between the two, but they are different. Those are different fields for different purposes and severity of situation. So
yeah, and what a difference it's made to our loved ones. You know, my kids have their AM PM packets. My 83-year-old mother does. You know, my dear wife does, who's got a birthday coming up. No need for me to mention her age. I might get a slap later. But needless to say, it's so delightful to know that you're safely supporting the health care of those who are most precious to you in a way that's so simple, so straightforward, and so broadly supportive. Now, I think a very important principle we should move into here, I think this would be the best broadcast to include this in, is talk more about variability. We talked about information and as a signaling agent and how signaling agents actually work. the difference, for example, between the low point and the high point of that particular nutrient when we're talking about biochemistry here, Greg. I think it would be great to move in and talk about the role of variability in both signaling and how the body and biological processes respond to that variability and how we've seen that show up with respect to the on the clinical side, Dr. David, being the two, you know, docs still in this group of four that are practicing clinically and being able to measure people's real-world responses, how that looks when we measure their temperature rhythms, their heart rate variability rhythms, et cetera. So, Greg, would you move into just sharing a bit about that?
Sure thing. I guess the easiest way to start that off is that many of us tend to think that the body responds to things by based on, like as an example, noise, based on how loud something is. So if we take that analogy to vision, how, you know, bright something is, or if we take that to a supplement, then it would be the dose of the supplement. And there's an element of truth to that, but it's an overly simplistic way of looking at it. So what scientific studies have shown is if we hold any sound constant, it doesn't matter how faint or loud it is, but an easy way to think of it would be like the hum of a refrigerator in your home. It would be a relatively constant sound. And when there's an unchanging signal like that, it's only a matter of time before the body effectively, in essence, cancels it out, so we stop hearing it, which is why probably up until I mentioned the refrigerator, anyone sitting near enough to hear one in their home or apartment at this moment had been unaware of it, and now they might have noticed it. The same if we were to hold some visual stimulus completely unchanging and fix the eye on that, it only takes about 45 seconds before the eye stops being able to see it. So our nervous system and all of our systems in our body are designed to cancel out things that don't change. And why that's important gets to that idea of variability you were just mentioning, Mark. The reason we can respond to signals in our environment is based on not any absolute quantity of, or loudness of the signal, so to speak, but on how that signal changes. So I remember back when I was in the Navy, we'd be out at sea and, you know, there's constant noise. You have pumps and engines and you name it, ventilation that's going 24/7. And so there would be constant noise, but, you know, you'd sleep through it, you know, no worries whatsoever. But I would wake up, I was in charge of a lot of the engineering equipment, I'd go from sound asleep to completely alert when one of those things stopped. So it wasn't in that point, you know, extra noise that was causing that. It was just simply the change, which the change was actually less noise. And that same principle applies to everything in our body, that it's not how much of something we're given, it's are we giving it in a way to maximize that idea of change. Because when we do, similar to that example I just said with noise in the ship, sometimes it's really more, getting a response with a feather rather than a sledgehammer. And that can make a huge difference when we're trying to do something to promote health over long periods of time. So the goal, I know as we've discussed it on multiple times, is we want people to be able to hear, the metaphor would be hear something as quiet as a refrigerator, because we want the background environment in their system to be as noise-free as possible. And what happens when we give, say, supplements the same dose three times a day, we're actually, rather than taking advantage of our body's wiring towards change, we're in essence putting a constant signal out across the entire day, day after day, day after day. And over time, what can happen, and it's what David mentioned clinically, you're taking the same amount of a vitamin or mineral as someone else might be doing that's timing it appropriately, but you'll get a very different response. In essence, your body in many respects will do what we talked about with noise and vision. It'll just start ignoring it, so to speak.
And that carries through to all kinds of things with regards to human physiology, inclusive of exercise now. There's good data to support that variability in exercise. So, you know, both walking and then having a lot of variability. A great analogy that Mark and I use all the time is, and I think people can relate to because we see it on television and, you know, maybe we've lived it in real life, is in a hospital situation, the EKG that we see and the variability in those waveforms, and the more variability when we've got that, nice strong pulse and you see that wave up and down, beep, 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 and it's when there is no variability that we're in trouble. We've got that flat line. And so that applied to all kinds of things to do with human physiology. I know that, Greg, you've talked before about the variability in exercise and variability in all kinds of different things that we can do is helpful to us physiologically.
Yeah, there was actually, we just talked about this, I believe, in our health professional call 2 weeks ago on when we were discussing metabolic syndrome. And there was two studies I've seen recently that, in essence, measured people's proclivity towards breaks during the day. So kind of, getting up from your desk, walking over to the water cooler, you name it, and just had a device called an accelerometer on people to objectively measure how many times people took breaks during the day. And what they found is, independent of the amount of actual exercise someone was getting, so if they had two identical people that were both exercising in a dedicated way 30 minutes a day, the person that took multiple breaks during the day had way better physiological responses over the course of the study. So this wasn't dedicated exercise. It was just punctuating your day with variability.
And isn't that fascinating?
There's another way to take a look at variability, and it's really from day to day. And one of the things that I've loved about health coaches' ability to package nutrients, AMPM packages, that I can actually vary those for being on a couple of days, off a couple of days. And that's another type of variability that actually creates a better effect using less, once again. And surprising the body, or having that message, that informational molecules that are present in nutritional support agents, has a greater effect when potentially not taken on a daily basis. So that was a real plus for my patients.
Yeah, you have to educate them in advance, though, because they come in and go, I didn't have vitamin D today, or there was no ginseng in my packet today. So a little advanced education is good. And while we want to have a regular pulse of that particular nutrient, I agree with Dr. David here. We found that by varying certain things, which sometimes just happens quite kind of serendipitously, they'll just forget their packets one day or this or that. And I always explain to people, don't worry about that. A little variability is good for you. But while we're on the topic of variability and waveforms, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't underscore something we've talked about in some earlier calls about the ability to measure people's responses to the various ways that we can encourage and support variability. So one of our stands at Health Coach for the last 20 years since we originally founded Health Coach was to that, and you've heard us speak to what we call the response model of health now, which is it's not so much what we do but how we respond to it which is most important. So while there's umpteen different theories, and I was just reading one of the most frequently visited websites in the health field, especially natural health field, puts out a newsletter, and the newsletter was about their latest, greatest multiple vitamin, which there's a lot of really good components to that. And it was delivered in 8 capsules, recommended 2 capsules 4 times a day, which goes completely against the principles that we're talking about here. Again, so right stuff, wrong time of day, and these were all in one capsule, so know that you can't fit more stuff in a capsule. So if you've got 8 capsules worth of nutrients, then you need to deliver that in 8 capsules. When you blend it all together, which is the easiest way to do it from a manufacturing standpoint, and it would be from a delivery standpoint as well, if there is no such thing as chronobiology here, then that would make sense. In the absence of understanding chronobiology, or in the presence of ignoring it for economic gain and simplicity, then people are going to be taking what could be very good, but at multiple times of the day, which basically blunts the kind of rhythms that we see. And having done that by default, because there weren't supplements created as we moved in and began to evaluate this aspect of clinical nutrition, then we could see that by delivering nutrients in really, which was basically the old way to deliver in accord with old paradigms, where it was what mattered was what you delivered, not when you delivered it, we didn't see people's rhythms as we measured them improve. Looking at things like heart rate variability and temperature rhythms, you can see some very distinct waveforms that are much more robust with people that are healthier and more vital. And we actually have been able to monitor over the last many years people's response to subtle changes in their lifestyle, one of those changes being how you deliver nutrients. And a huge difference for my dear mother when I first measured her heart rate variability, the first opportunity was approximately 5 years ago when we measured her heart rate variability, and she had just come from a checkup where the doc goes, you know, this gal's rocking. She's got great blood pressure. She's got great, you know, blood lipid, no sign of diabetes. She, you know, healthy as a horse. I did her heart rate variability and went, Mom, we got to sit down and talk. I don't want to alarm you, but you've got no variability here. She was so prone to dementia, chronic disease, was so evident with one simple non-invasive test. And one of the key things that we did, sure, we paid more attention to her meal timing. We got her going out morning and evening. We got her varying her exercise. But one of the key things that made a big difference was we began to deliver her nutrients with the advent as we developed our current system, which 5 years ago we were just launching the first, we created the first ways to do this with a custom nutrient program. And to see the difference in her measures with heart rate variability and see her come very literally back to life and see that waveform be reestablished, contrary to, for example, Rick, what you're talking about, where it's when someone flatlines, we know that life has left that person. Their wave-like nature has become flatline. The opposite of that is true. As you see that wave-like nature return and become more robust in those waveforms, the low point and the high point, the greater range in that, then that's synonymous with improving health and vitality. And despite the fact she's 5 years older now, she's much more vital. And one of the great ways that we've supported that is by recognizing the importance of variability in her nutritional program. So I hope at the very least we've inspired you to read the bulletin that we've included called Chrono Nutrition, and it should be very clear from there that your next step would be to complete a health and lifestyle assessment online, which, by the way, both our health and lifestyle assessment and our shape-shift assessments factor in chrono nutrition and chronobiological distinctions. So the nutritional recommendations that your health coach would come up with as a result of completing either of those comprehensive assessments would be consistent with chrononutrition principles. So know that. And those of you that are listening that don't have a health coach, remember, you just use the Access a Health Coach link from your radio website portal page or from the Health Coach portal page. When you go to healthcoach.com, you'll see that there's a link to Access a Health Coach. Choose from the various certified health coaches that are available there. Use their health access code, and that establishes a relationship between you and them, and they can follow up, even if it's just a virtual relationship, to help you get on a more chrononutrition-friendly, more appropriately dosed foundation nutrition support program for you that's completely safe over the long term, which can be adapted for seasons and changes in your lifestyle with a few simple clicks of a mouse. So just keep that in mind. We're not sharing this information with you to have you, you know, get through paralysis through analysis here. We want to empower you and help you know that there are steps that you can take that can make a huge difference that are very, very readily done thanks to the technology that we've developed over the last number of years. So, gentlemen, if there's anything else you'd like to share that you feel kind of remiss or an oversight, we're about the end of our scheduled time here. Anything you'd like to share before we sign off here? And
just get your assessment. If you're a corporate client, you access that through your LifeStrive dashboard.
Excellent, Rick. Yeah, thank you for reminding our listeners who are part of our corporate programs for that. Excellent. So thank you again for your terrific insights and leadership, both Dr. Greg and Dr. David. Always appreciated. And thank you for making yourselves available on these Fridays to share these calls. Those that listen to these after the fact are certainly reporting back to us at Health Coach Central that they're finding them useful and insightful, and they can share them by doing simple MP3 downloads with whoever they wish or by referring their friends and family or coworkers to our site to listen to these things. So thank you for your time, Health Coach listenership, and we look forward to being with you again either in one of our courses at Health Coach University as early as this coming Monday or Wednesday, or back with us next week on Health Coach E-Radio. Thanks again, and make it a great weekend, all.